Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show here on the Voice of Vachon. We're located on Vachon Island, Washington, and we have this weekly show where we strive made that introduction. And we do our best to have intelligent discussions of current events, laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Our current Briefly panel is a bit reduced today. We have our historian, professor, down under aficionado and guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Just washed my tongue. Can't do a thing with it. You know what I mean? Yes,
just need to be ironed a little bit.
Right? I think so. Got it. So we've got three of our panel are missing today. Craig Bellis, Amy Dreher, and Kevin Jones were off on separate adventures. But we're delighted to have a couple of people filling in. A big welcome to Lynn Kerrigan. She's a former Brown Briefly panelist and former social worker. And what was it that used to be the shortstop of the Dixie Debutantes?
You always refused to call me by the actual name.
Oh, what was it?
Which was when I was 15 to 17. I was on the Midway Debutantes in Atlanta. Uh-huh. You have to understand what that means geographically.
Oh, okay.
So it kind of was not the Dixie Debutantes in any way either.
No.
Although it was called the Midway Debutantes.
The Midway Debutantes.
Must have been done ironically.
That is funny. Well, anyway, we're glad to have you
in.
Very much welcome. And filling in also is Captain Joe Wibald. He's a retired U.S. Coast Guard icebreaker captain and current head of the Friends of Point Robinson. In fact, he is the host of his own radio show, From the Captain's Chair, which airs here on KVSH every Tuesday, just about half an hour after the Brown Briefly. And welcome, Captain Joe.
Thank you, Captain O'Brien. And I always address you as captain because it is captain to captain. But I believe on Brown Briefly, you are better known as Truman.
Yes, sir.
However, I'm going to exert my authority and continue to address you as captain because you earned and flew, and I don't know how many thousands of hours you have in your logbook, but many. And
20 plus.
And we've talked a lot about some of your adventures, and we've talked probably to exhaustion about some of mine.
Indeed. Although they're fascinating stories, Captain Joe. Anyway, welcome. We're glad you're
here. Thank
you. And I am Truman O'Brien. I engineer the Brown Briefly and am today's host, which is an unusual task for me. Also today, we're going to welcome our guest, Marie Bradley. Marie is from the Vachon Park District Foundation, and we're going to have some important conversations with Marie here in just a few minutes about the foundation. But welcome, Marie. Glad you're here.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm very anxious to tell everybody about our projects and start spreading the word.
Good.
Glad to have you.
As always, we always start with looking at our favorite moments from the past week. Some good, some bad. So, Bruce, how about you? How was your week?
Some good and some bad.
One of those.
The good part was we've had a great time crabbing this season. I have a new crab boat that's just delightful to work on. And yesterday we were out crabbing. We had a decent weekend. You know, it's not been a booming crab season, but it's been good. But quite a few really big dungeness crabs and lots of red rock. But yesterday we were intent on pulling up our last pot and looked up and who would pull up beside us but the Washington State Fish and Wildlife.
Oh, really?
Busted.
You're busted.
So we all take a deep breath and hope that we measured all the crab, you know, properly, all that sort of stuff. So they come up in this sort of soft-sided, you know, sort of inflatable kind of boat that they pull up beside us and, you know, check our licenses out, take our crabs, which were all in buckets, drift off and sort of inspect them and all that stuff and come back. And everything was in order. All the crab were the right size. The problem was that I had not signed my crab card when we pulled the crab up. You know, I always wait until I get home and sort them out and then fill out the card. Well, apparently you're supposed to fill it out when you pull them up.
Oh.
So I was delinquent there. So I got a warning from Fish and Wildlife about next time. And we didn't have a pen on board.
Of course.
Which is sort of like usually with Vashona, you know, I've got everything I need.
So
kitchen sink included. But, you know, on the crab boat, it's sort of like, oh, wait a minute. I'm supposed to have a pen?
Oh, no.
So it was kind of one of those good and bad days. But I got off with a warning. But next time I will sign my crab card. Well, when I'm pulling up the crab.
Yes, and
which
luckily,
is something I never realized you had to do.
Of course.
I mean, I always turn in the card at the end of the year and all that stuff, but apparently they want you to fill it out while you're crabbing.
Right away.
Well, you are very low-hanging fruit for them.
Exactly,
you know?
They are
just after somebody like you.
It was a Monday.
Yeah.
Monday in the evening. So,
what would really have made your day, Doctor, is if the Coast Guard had pulled up alongside of you right after that.
Exactly.
And had cited you for a life jacket that was not a Coast Guard approved life jacket. Yeah. So you could have gone home with two citations.
No. We've got all the lifeguard, all the Coast Guard stuff covered. Yeah. You know, all the proper life jackets, all the proper horns and lights and all that sort of stuff. So Coast Guard would have given us a thumbs up.
So
Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah. So, Captain Joe, you were involved in a number of those inspections, were you not?
Yes. When I was the commander of Coast Guard people in the Great Lakes, we did a lot of that kind of boarding. And it's also done by the Coast Guard Auxiliary, which is a wonderful civilian organization. And many Coast Guard people, when they become honored retirees, then go into the Coast Guard Auxiliary.
Oh, okay. All right.
But under my command, I've had a number of people who did that sort of thing.
I can imagine.
And now, of course, the Coast Guard is, they're all wearing weapons. And but before 9/11, it was a much more, I think a good word would be collegial.
Yeah,
the collegial
I was
way
friendly,
of going at it.
You're right.
And I regret that we no longer are able to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing that happened was up in my headquarters was in Sault Ste. Marie on the Michigan side, and the border between us and Sioux, Canada was almost non-existent. We went back and forth across that border all the time, and it was as if it was not there. Hmm. And, of course, now we don't have that.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
An interesting addition to the Coast Guard Auxiliary does courtesy inspections.
Yeah.
And so every year on opening day, Quartermaster Yacht Club brings out the Coast Guard Auxiliary, and they can inspect your boat, and they go through all the things that a Coast Guard inspection would go through. And so it's a good way at the beginning of boating season to make sure you got everything up to snuff.
That's a great idea.
You've got the flares, you've got the life jackets, you've got everything. So a great service that the Coast Guard Auxiliary provides.
Yeah, that is great. All right, Lynn, how about you? How was your week?
Hey, good, thank you. I'm laughing still at Bruce's tales, thinking, you know, this is an island and little things are very big.
Oh, they're big.
You know, on Vashon. Yeah. So I got my own citation a week or two ago when Murray's Disposal determined that for the first time in 35 years, they brought out that new thing where they grip the side of the recycling bin and then pull it mechanically onto the boat, and then it dumps the garbage for them. Never has that happened
on your route.
35 years of living here, never.
Yeah.
And so it happened the other day, and my handle was not out on the proper side, and I got a written warning.
Oh boy. So we got a couple of delinquents
so
here.
Too. But I wanted to say a couple of quick things because they have to do with some events that I've been preparing for this week that are coming up. And one is the Lantern Walk, which is part of the Isle Wild Arts Festival that has been happening this week. Lots of classes, lots of workshops, kind of featuring Vashon people. And there's been some workshops on building the kinds of lanterns that you can walk with, you know, in a procession. And there is, I'm thinking about this because they're going to have two poets come and read before the walk that's going to happen at 8 o'clock Friday night, this Friday night, the 9th, from the Village Green. They're going to be processing with those lanterns and their messages of grief or hope or peace or, you know, however people want their lanterns to represent them. Hmm. And Margaret Roncone, who's our current poet laureate, is going to read a piece on light, and great. I've been asked to read also. So there'll be two of us there kind of launching lofty thoughts as well as the lanterns coming up. And I just think this is a time for ritual. Yeah, you know, ritual is very healing and fun.
Good.
So that's one of the things that I've been working on.
So when is that going to be?
Friday night. This is August 9th, this coming up. Is the procession from the Lantern Walk workshops, which is going to be at Village Green. They're gathering around 7:30, and at 8 o'clock we'll be reading, and then the procession down, I don't know, from one end of town to another. I don't know the exact route.
Cool.
Yeah. And the other thing, if I might, I might mention, I've been playing a lot of Irish music these days, which has been... It's always fun. And one of our fiddlers has kind of come back to the fold after many years away, Diana Drayton, who's a wonderful fiddler. And her, I'm mentioning this because her daughter, Singley Agnew, lives in the East Coast, and she is a producer for PBS. Yeah. And she has just gotten a authorization for her documentary that she's been working on for years is going to be shown. It's a new civics program that's going to start October 8th on Sunday night, a four-part series called Citizen Nation. And it follows a group of high school students as they compete in civics debating.
Great.
And learning about civics and the components of our government and the national polity and how we have come to be the way we are and how to stand up for your beliefs in an effective way and really understand how to participate in a democracy, not be a passive subscriber.
Fantastic.
So that's going to be starting October 8th at 9 p.m. on Sunday nights for four nights. And that's the daughter of one of our fold.
All right. Excellent.
Citizen Nation on PBS starting October 8th.
Excellent.
Thank you, Singley Agnew and Diana, for bearing her and raising her.
All right. Thanks. All right, Captain Joe, how was your week?
Captain, I had an absolutely splendid week. And just give you two examples. On Saturday, I was having breakfast at Sporty's, our own Denny's, and I was having breakfast with my friend, neighbor, and colleague, Dr. Scott Phillips. He and I breakfast there every time that both of us are in town together as a stop en route to the transfer station.
Yeah.
And after we had, and it's always a great place to see people, and often you see people that you haven't seen for some time, and that's exactly what happened. And then it was Dr. Phillips' turn to pay the bill, and he got his credit card out, and he gave it to Bobby, and she returned it, and she said, your breakfast has been already covered.
Whoa.
Well, Bobby, who? And she said, I'm not to tell you who.
Oh.
So I have exercised my right as one of your Army buddies, and I have sent an agent from your unit, from that intelligence gathering unit, to find out who it was that bought and paid for our breakfast.
All right.
I have a suspicion, and I sent a signal to that particular suspected person, but I have received no answer back.
Oh,
so that was the first thing that happened. Then the next thing was Sunday. Sunday was the 4th of August, and the 4th of August was the 234th birthday of the Coast Guard.
Right.
I have served the Coast Guard my entire life. I started out when I was 17. And so it was also a day for me to give tours out at Point Robinson Light. And I took the opportunity to proclaim to all who came, and there were probably altogether during the entire afternoon, maybe 200 people passed through. It was a very busy, busy afternoon. And I took the opportunity to pontificate at some great length on the subject of the Coast Guard, of its age, of my age, which is not 234 years, and of the and I fulfilled my mission, which is the same as my mission for my broadcast, which is that I want everybody who spends a little bit of time with us to feel just a little bit better about themselves and about the world in which we live. And so it was just a wonderful day, and it was especially made that way because I had a lot of children that came through. And in particular, there were a number of groups of children of Indians. And so we got into a conversation. I said to one of the parents, do you speak Hindi at home, or do you speak English, or do you speak both? And the mother said that their daughters have better facility with English than they do with Hindi, but that they are fluent in both languages and that they continue that that at home. What is really striking about beautiful, beautiful children, and when they bring in the shells from the beach and they go to the counter where we have them all displayed so that they can figure out which ones they've got, and they bring them over to the captain, and we have these long discussions about what kind of shells they are and where they found them, and do you have a dog? Did you bring a dog? Yes, we brought a dog, and so there's always water and healthy treats for the dogs. So it is always just a wonderful, but it was made especially wonderful because I was able to work in some good stuff about the Coast Guard and about the service and about lighthouses. And we covered a lot of other ground as well. It's really interesting to me what people want to talk about.
Indeed.
The troll started out as being people coming to the lighthouse by mistake and wanting to know why the troll was there, not there.
Right.
And I always tell them that I have commanded seven different units in the Coast Guard, and not at a single one of them was there ever a troll, and therefore the troll is not ever going to be down on the Coast Guard property.
There you go.
But it's turned around the other way. Now people come down to the lighthouse. They want to spend some time there. They want to talk about that kind of thing. And then they say, oh, and by the way, where is the troll?
No, that's good.
And I say,
that's
if good. You insist on going, it's go up that trail up to the upper parking lot.
Yeah.
So I just have had a glorious and wonderful week, and I cannot even think of how anything could possibly have been better.
Yes, absolutely. How about you, Marie? How was your week?
It was amazingly busy. I had a wonderful time at our first concert at the park.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm setting up a little table and putting my displays out for that, even though there's music. We're not doing a lot of talking, but I'll hand out brochures, and I plan on doing that at all of these.
Good.
But by far my most meaningful event of the week was saying goodbye to Fran O'Reilly at her memorial out at Glendoa Farm. And what a gathering of people and remembrance. And it was really quite special. And the week was just incredibly busy, and I've been looking forward to this.
Good.
So,
well, my week, the highlight of my week is getting my well house repaired. I hired a gentleman to come out, and boy, he is doing a great job. I'm very pleased, very efficient, and really good work. And it's always gratifying to see somebody exhibiting those skills for you personally. You know, anyway, that's great. All right, so hey, today is August 6th. We got 5 days until the Olympics are over. Oh, darn, I was going to get a medal count.
You do that, can I just mention it's also the last day to get your ballot in.
Indeed.
It's voting, and I meant to actually highlight my mention of Citizen Nation because it was the last day to get your ballot in, please. Put it in a drop box or get it in the mail.
Absolutely. We were going to spend a little time on that. We did this morning bring that up so folks would know. So let's see. Right now, the U.S. has got a total of, 79 medals, 21 are gold, 30 are silver, and 28 are bronze. And looks like, my golly, we may be the most medals for our country. So that's good. We got 12 days until the Virginia 5 cruise around Vashon with the Heritage Museum. I'm sure a lot of folks are looking forward to that. 91 days to the presidential election on November 5th, and I know people are looking forward to that. And, of course, 166 days until the presidential inauguration on January 20th, 2025. Kind of interesting, today in history, 1787, the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia began, and they debated the first draft of the Constitution, which is pretty cool. 1856, the Great Bell, which is from the Great Clock of Westminster, this Big Ben, was cast. 1890, the future Hall of Fame pitcher Cy Young threw his first three-hit ball in his MLB debut with the Cleveland Spiders in an 8-1 win over the Chicago Colts. I always thought that was cool. The Cleveland Spiders. 1926, now this is a good one. In 1926, American Gertrude Ederle, she was only 20 years old. She became the first woman to swim the English Channel. It took her 14 hours and 39 minutes, which was a record for either male or female. And our own Heidi Skripek, a relay team, the Salish Selkies, this past June 11th, also swam it, and they did it in 13 hours and 50 minutes. That team, by the way, is made up of Heidi and Islanders there are a whole lot of Marys. Mary Singer, Mary Robinson, and off-Islanders Mary Belicek and Aaron O'Regan and Chelsea Lee. By the way, this was done in 53 to 56 degree water. They don't get to wear wetsuits or anything. They just have to have a swimsuit, goggles. That's it. I asked her, I said, well, do you grease up or anything? She said, nope, not allowed. They just have to be, and they swim in, it's a relay, so they each one swims for an hour, and then they swap out. And she said, boy, getting back into that water the second time is not a lot of fun. And she said also that August 11th, the Point Defiance swim is going to happen. That's from Tahlequah to Point Defiance, so might want to be watching for that. And the last item was in 1945. It was August 6th was the date that the atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. And, of course, that was by the Superfortress, the B-29 Superfortress in Enola Gay. And I have a little history with that. It was based, when they mothballed it, it was only 5 miles from Meyer Farm down in West Texas. Yeah, and I got to climb around in it at one time, which is kind of cool. I think probably one of the things that inspired me to become a pilot, I'm not sure. But anyway. All right, so now we're finally getting around to our small talk segment. And Marie, you're currently on the board of the Vashon Park District Foundation, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
All right. And so, you know, Marie, I feel odd asking for you to tell us about yourself since I've known you for more than 30 years. But
way more.
but please tell us a little bit about how long, of course, the standard questions you have to ask an Islander. How long have you lived on the island? What brought you here to start with?
Okay, I grew up in Seattle and was in the Puget Sound area and came out to the island. My mother had moved out here. I came to escape an evil first husband and thought I would just stay a couple weeks, and I never left. This island just felt right to me immediately. And I wasn't long at all till I got involved with the parks. We were forming Paradise Ridge Park in, what was about 83 or something. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was young and new to the island, so I wasn't one of the people forming the district, but I started volunteering with it right away and have been a board member of the Horse Association since its inception and was a park steward and all that. So I've been involved with the park district for that long. And I knew that the Park District was pretty good about letting us do things that we wanted if we provided the labor and the money and everything. And so I had gotten more and more irritated with losing the view at Inspiration Point, and started working on that. And that's how I got involved with the foundation.
So the Inspiration Point was your inspiration?
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay. So, Bruce, do you have some history on that? Or?
Well, yeah, a little bit. Marie and I are working on a little piece for the Beachcomber Time and Again article about Inspiration Point, about the history of it. I mean, it was always, particularly after the island was logged, I mean, it was always a spectacular view. I mean, almost, not quite a 360, but almost a 360-degree view from Seattle all the way around to sort of Point Defiance. I mean, and even when I came here in 73, I was just digging through my old photographs. I have a photograph of myself and my family up at Inspiration Point, and it's just spectacular. There's one tree sticking its head up into the view. Otherwise, it's just a clear view.
Beautiful, yeah.
And even in the 1920s, there's some great Norman Edson photographs from up there looking north, and you can see all the way to Seattle. You can see the Outer Harbor, Burton, the Peninsula, the Inner Harbor, KVI Beach, all the way to Seattle. And, of course, there are a number of photographs from up there of Mount Rainier looking over top of Maury Island. And, in fact, the photograph that Marie used on the poster is not taken from Inspiration Point, but it's kind of the inspiration of what we want Inspiration Point to look like again,
yeah.
To be able to see the mountain, to be able to see the view through the trees.
So, Marie, what is the plan for Inspiration Point?
Well, the plan, it's somewhat fluid and organic, mm-hmm. as any gardening project is, or landscaping project. About a year and a half ago, I recruited the South End Community Club, who has one of their projects is always roadside cleanup. And we spent a day, had over 30 volunteers, and cleaned up what we could do, mm-hmm. you know, as volunteers there. And it still looks quite a bit better. We pruned and weeded and tidied up. But we need, at this point, we need a forester who can climb up the trees and cut off branches. And, of course, I'm showing posters on the radio. So the old picture from Inspiration Point we have on our website, but it really doesn't show our vision of what this will look like, where the famous Norman Edson photo of Mount Rainier through the trees, that's the look we're going for. So if someone looks at the old pictures from Inspiration Point and donates, they may be, I don't think they'll be disappointed with the view we get. But it's not going to be a clear cut. We're not going to do that to the forest. We're trying to open the view without disturbing the soil. It's a fairly steep slope. We don't want erosion. And so we're going to try to keep it simple. We may need to whack down some brush. We'll see how it goes when he gets up there and starts cutting off limbs.
Right.
And we actually have permission with this project, even though I have a monetary goal in mind, we have permission to do it incrementally. Once we get 3 or 4 days worth of money, we can get the forester up there and see how we go, and then we'll see how much more we need and how much more we need.
Well, that's a great way to do it. I mean,
I think it's going to be fun. I'm so excited to start seeing that curtain pulled back.
Exactly.
And
is there a time frame on this?
Oh, as soon as we get money. And then it will take a little time because I'm sure he's not sitting there just waiting for the phone to ring
for us to call. Yeah.
This time of year, he probably has tons of work.
Yeah.
So, you know, as soon as we can, we'll get moving on this. I wanted to do it a year ago, so I'm very ready to see this happen. But that's not always reality. I tend to be impatient.
Yeah. let me ask you a question about how much have you raised, how much you're looking to raise, what's a total project? Okay. Give us a sense of how we can help.
Okay, well, giving me this format is wonderful. Mm-hmm. we set a goal of $30,000, which I believe is more than we need. If we have 10 days of forestry work at one of the bid I most want to accept is $1,800 a day. So 10 days would be $18,000. And then the signage, I had talked to you and I think Carol Slaughter about the expensive signage. And so I have $10,000 in the project for that. But like as I said, it's sort of fluid. If we... We'll see how we go. My picture of the signage, I would love to have a sign that where you look towards Portage that just explains the year of when it was filled in and how that happened. And when you look towards Mount Rainier and Docton, a description of that. And I would love to see three different signs. And the marker up there now talks about George Vancouver, but I doubt if he ever stood up there.
No.
I would rather just have signage that explains what you're looking at when you look out at the view.
Well, so. Bruce, isn't there already a plan for historical signs around the island as well?
Not around the island. There's a historic trail being developed for Ellisport.
That's kind of what
I was there's saying. Another historic trail being developed for Burton.
Burton, yeah.
And there's a historic trail group at Liza Beulah. But one of my goals is to ultimately have historic trails all around the island. Mm-hmm. And, of course, working with Marie and the folks with the Park Foundation to do signage at Inspiration Point would just be spectacular to give people a sense of what they're seeing.
Mm-hmm. So, right. Mm-hmm. And, Captain Joe, I would think you can even use those at Point Robinson, too, right?
Well, I'd like to take Marie back to foundations just a little bit.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Because I've been involved with parks for as long as I've lived on the island, in particular mostly through Point Robinson, mm-hmm. which carries its own funding sources with it. But I was very much working with parks when the foundation was first established, and then it went dormant for a while. Mm-hmm. So what was the how did it get formed up and moving again to where you are today? Because now we have this lovely brochure printed on hard paper, and I've got a couple questions that I want to ask you about the brochure. But we're now moving into a much more professional-looking operation, and a well-done, as military people say, Bravo Zulu for that.
Well, I'm not the one that did the technical work. We have a wonderful woman on the board, Danielle Heinz, who's developed our website. And
this is the foundation board which is separate
board.
From the park board.
Yeah. And I had, with the Horse Association too, in Paradise Ridge, we were a 501(c). So I had never had to worry about our funding. We could accept donations and it was smooth. In fact, Truman's wife, Mary, she keeps track of everything. I just show up usually and lift heavy stuff and do things like that. But when I got interested in Inspiration Point, and I had gone to the South End Community Club for help, and I knew they had a treasury, and I asked them, could we use your treasury to solicit funds to do this, and then we could just do it, and it would be so easy. Mm-hmm. But they were not a 501(c), and correct. They wanted nothing to do with having a whole bunch of checks coming in and processing and keeping track. And they just were not going to let me do that. So I am
a South End member, so I know what you're.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So I went to Elaine and asked, and she told me that there was this foundation with a EIN number and everything that was a 501(c), but that they needed a few board members. And that was a year and a half ago, and we're now just going, really getting active. It has taken a long time to become this professional looking, and our website has tons of information about the foundation. We have our guiding principles and mission, and it seemed endless.
What is the website?
The website is VashonParksFoundation.org.
Okay.
With an S after Parks.
Okay.
Well, I don't think it's my turn again to ask another question, but...
Go for it.
Lynn is ready to go here.
Well, I am so interested in how the park manages to stay so vibrant and so alive and so engaged in so many things. You know, I grew up a child of the Parks Department when I was young in the South. The Parks Department was everything, you know, all the little local teams and... supporting community groups and all that with their work. And I'm just always worried about you wondering how you are balancing. I just love to hear how your foundation contributes to the big questions of maintenance of all the many things we want and like and have versus, you know, new projects and new priorities that arise. It's just such a big ask of everybody, and I'm curious how the foundation contributes to prioritization and kind of promotion of new projects.
Well, our function really is not to run the park district.
Right.
And, years ago when there was all the uproar with the VES fields, we used to go to all the meetings and sit there and try to, you know, keep an eye on everything. And once they hired Elaine, she just seemed to get everything under control. And I've completely quit going to the park board meetings because I don't need to. I feel like it's being really well managed and taken care of. But they have a capital improvement budget, and they look way into the future, and they have amounts of money for different things. But there's some stuff that we just can't afford with our tax basis here.
Yes.
And our tax system is complicated and difficult to understand. And sometimes money gets shifted around within a budget because things come up. For example, the Inspiration Point has had money in the budget. It always gets bumped for something that actually breaks and needs fixing, not just so that Marie can see a nice view. And an example is Inspiration Point itself. The rock wall failed. It was being eroded. The drainage went straight down the hill, and it was slumping over. The park district just 2 years ago had to pay. They hired Jake Johnson, and he did a beautiful job of moving that wall up more onto solid ground and fixing it. And he repaired the drainage. He put an extra drain in the parking lot, and the park district owns the land just south of or west of the parking lot there. And so they ran, instead of having the drainage go straight down the hill under the wall, he actually created a bit of a drain field going over to the park district land and really did some fix up, but that used up the money. And so view is still penciled in, but it's so far in the future. But if we make money through our foundation, it's earmarked. Nobody can muscle it over for something else. And so the Inspiration Point money will not be used for pickleball courts or for fixing a roof or a pump or anything like that. Same thing for our other projects. The money can be earmarked and set aside. And if we don't do a project, that money can even be returned. That comes in very importantly in the Tramp Harbor dock replacement.
Exactly.
If someone made a huge donation, which we could really use, of, you know, maybe $10,000 or something, and then if the grants didn't come through and we didn't do the project, that would be returned. But we're just different. We're separate, and we can support projects that would not happen otherwise.
Exactly.
So as long as you're talking about that, Marie, what other projects do you have in mind?
Okay, so we have decided to start with Inspiration Point because that was pretty much ready to go as far as support and an idea, and the Tramp Harbor Dock replacement, which is also... The engineering is 95% complete on that. Elaine has applied for grants, and we need matching funds to support her applications. So that's ready to go. And we have our other projects that we're working on right now are helping to raise money for pickleball, dedicated pickleball courts. And we have applied for grants for some shade sales for Ober Park play area and for the VES field dugouts. And we also have on our list improvements to the pool, the public pool, but that is still in the design phase, so we don't have much data on that right now. But we'd like to get work on these projects first before taking on anything else, that eventually, hopefully, we will.
And so you're actually, are you raising money in general, or are you raising money specifically for these projects so that, so like if I gave you $10, I can say I want this to go to Inspiration Point?
You certainly could.
Yeah, okay.
And we also have a general fund. We needed that for...
Well, publications, your brochure and... website and all of that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, we had to rent a P.O. box and, things like that seem like expensive when you have nothing. We've started that, but we want it mostly earmarked for projects.
Right. Captain Joe,
so organizationally, are you set up with to be self-directed, or is there in the plan an executive director that will come on board possibly as a volunteer, but somebody who would actually do the day-to-day work as advised by the board?
We are not, we're trying to be, or picture ourselves as somewhat passive as far as fundraising, that people who have an interest in a project would create a bunch of the fundraising, and we're a conduit for taking in the money and putting it in the right envelopes and seeing that it gets appropriated properly. Inspiration Point's a little different because we came to them looking for a way. It's really surprising to me how there wasn't a way to take donations without the foundation. I was looking for someone that I could give money to and have this happen, and I think the foundation's very important that way.
Well, full disclosure, I spent 8 years as a park commissioner. I was elected commissioner, and I can tell you that the whole financial situation there is very complicated. And who gets funding and how they get funding is way complicated that most people on the island, I don't think, fully understand. But, Lynn, I see you jumping at the bit.
It was just kind of why I asked the question. Uh-huh. I'm aware they're separate entities and how a foundation is supposed to work and all of that in support of the broader organization. Mm-hmm. But I think we all know and could list a couple of examples, the PTA, the libraries, where their friends of the library or the PTAs are now funding major capital, and personnel expenses, just because there needs to be money from somewhere for us to meet our own ambitions, whether or not it's financially viable in the long run for the organization. So I really appreciate hearing how you've figured out a way to carve out, what you've already committed to, kind of keep your questions of what we can do realistic with the people coming to you already having some concept of funds.
And one of the issues is that, in particular when it comes to voting on funding, that none of the official facilities can be used for that. The individuals can't promote that sort of thing. So they're really limited on asking for money. I mean, it's hard. So they need to have a Friends of or a foundation or something in order.
Exactly.
So I know that you guys aren't primarily looking at supporting the election or the levy lid, but of course that is something that you could participate in if you had to.
Well, and we hope that by raising money independently from taxes in the elections, that we can have goodies without burdening everybody with too much taxes.
Sure.
We have we've all experienced our friends moving away from the island because of the tax burden. Mm-hmm. And not everybody wants, not everybody even drives past Inspiration Point. I'm sure there's people who would resent if their tax money was going to that.
To beautify and, it, yeah.
And Tramp Harbor Dock, the replacement, is just plain too expensive. We can't afford that out of our tax money. We need to have grants, and the grants want matching funds. And so there's things that need independent money. There's people who, through their jobs or volunteer activities, have planned giving every year, and they have maybe employee matches and things like that, that we want to be on their list of organizations. So there can be money available. I don't think our goals are completely out of reach of this island, but we don't need to put it on everybody's taxes. So that's our goal, is to give people a little relief that way.
So the Tramp Harbor Dock is the big item.
That's our big
and
one.
So what is the plan, the outreach plan, to go to the community and raise the delta between what Elaine has been able to put together and what the actual cost is going to be?
That's a good question. And we're just now, we could definitely use some help with marketing. And we are looking for, we'd welcome few more board members, or if someone was good at marketing but was not interested in sitting on the board, we're looking for volunteer help. And our website, right next to the donation button, the button that's just as important is our volunteer interest button, and there's a form to fill out there. And there's also down below that, if you don't want to volunteer but you just want to keep track of us, there's a keep me informed section to put down your name and email and phone number. So we're trying to gather. Nobody knows we exist at this point, so we're trying to gather some momentum and get stuff going. And we are concerned about the Tramp Harbor Dock because it's a big push.
There's some time constraints on that as well.
Yes, there are. Elaine has applied for, I think it's $2.5 million in grants, mm-hmm. but they want to see Vashon having skin in the game. If we can't come up with matching funds, they won't approve the grants. Mm-hmm. And I may be getting out of my expertise here, but my understanding is that since that's Park District property and a Park District problem, I know she has $200,000 set aside for the project out of our budgets. And if we don't replace the dock, she's going to have to spend that on removing it. Mm-hmm. And so that money would just be spent for us to have nothing there. Yeah. And it seems to me it's a very good risk, especially since people's donations would be returned if it doesn't happen, for us to put an effort into this. I'd sure rather see that beautiful replacement dock than nothing there, and $200,000 gone from our budget for nothing. So, I mean, that may be a total oversimplification. I might be wrong.
And my sense is that the total project will be $2.5+ million.
It'll be about $3 million, yeah, I believe.
But we're not looking to raise, the foundation is not looking to raise that much. I mean, it's to match what the Park District can put in.
We are looking to raise $300,000.
Right.
So that's our goal. And, you know, of course, we don't match them at all, but the Land Trust seems to be able to do that in one night by having a fabulous dinner and music. Yeah, and they've been building their promotional team for years and years and years. I'm not saying, but I don't think it's impossible. I wouldn't be supporting this if I did.
And if somebody wanted to donate to the Tramp Harbor Dock specifically. Mm-hmm. They go to the website, they click the donation button, and is there a place then where I could yes. designate I wanted to go to yes. Inspiration Point, or I wanted to go to the dock, or is it set up that way?
Yes, when you push the donation button, then it shows the four projects that we're working on now, and then you click on the one you want to donate on, or on our posters that we have around town, they have QR codes, the ones that say, if you see a poster that says replace the dock, the QR code on it goes straight to the dock mm-hmm. replacement. The restore the view ones for Inspiration Point, the QR code goes straight to that. On our brochures, we have a QR code that goes to the website, and then you poke around and find what you want to donate to. Some of the information on the website's not perfect. We had Bailey DeYoung down at the South End Community Club. She donated $500 to Inspiration Point, but she did it so early that the kinks weren't worked out, and her donation just showed as general funds, but we put it. Mm-hmm. So if you click on, I think yesterday I clicked on, and it showed the Inspiration Point amount that we'd earned so far at $2,900, but it's really $3,400. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now that's been ironed out. So if somebody goes there, it should go to where it's supposed to go, and you should be acknowledged. Mm-hmm. We're going to smooth out.
One thing that I really like about the whole Inspiration Point is that it's incremental. And that you can start right away as soon as you have enough money to get you started. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's fantastic. And one of the things about that is that as people come by, they can see progress and say, oh, my gosh, look, you know, I donated this and look what's happened already. You know, so that's a great
thing. I think it'll be fun.
That's a great idea.
I want to see it start.
So I have a quick question on the brochure.
Sure.
And that is under the general heading of guiding principles under partnership. It says that we collaborate with other island groups that support our mission and guiding principles. Who are some of the other island groups that you collaborate with that support your mission and guiding principles?
Well, the Historical Association has just been wonderful so far at letting us
Dr. Hallman over there?
Yes.
He has been wonderful?
Yes. Yeah. They gave us permission.
Well, that flies in the face of everything I've ever heard.
Yeah.
They gave us permission to use this wonderful Norman Edson photo that really shows the look we're going for in our posters. And Windermere Real Estate printed our brochures for us, and
you said the South End Club too.
The South End Community Club is just amazing. Yeah. That's like having a great big family help you. Mm-hmm. And
that's a very interesting organization. It is about as loosely organized as you can imagine any island group.
But they're consistent year after year after year. They three or four times a year have roadside cleanups and potlucks, and we don't have our own center anymore, but we're meeting at the Wesleyan Community Center lately. And Bailey says everyone is invited. We're all south of somewhere, right? So everyone's south of the Ferry Dock.
I had the joy of working with the South End Community Club and Carol Slaughter in particular to put together the sign for the Tahlequah Dock, mm-hmm. sort of about the history of the South End. And it is a fascinating organization. And it's one of those examples, and there's lots of them, where Vashon Islanders just sort of join together to solve problems on their own. And it's a long, long history of that on Vashon Island. And the South End Community Club is just one of those groups. They just take on whatever needs to be done.
Well, Al and Carol Slaughter have just been amazing, and what a life they've had, mm-hmm. and what influence. And I was their mail carrier for years, and mm-hmm. I'll never forget seeing Carol and a whole bunch of old ladies out in their red hats and purple sweatshirts, and riding around with four-wheeling it over, and they're, you know, they had so much fun.
So this would be a good place to mention that we just lost Al.
Yes, indeed.
And their contribution to island life was just tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Overwhelming, mm-hmm. indeed. So to finish up, Marie, is there anything else that you need to, that you'd like to pass on to us about
this? Oh, I hadn't realized we're just about out of time. Yeah. I just would ask people to, there was so much history I wanted to cover, but well, ask people to go to our website and look at it and read more detail. And I just thank you very much for having me.
Well, before we exit out of this, let me just take a minute and just have Marie tell us a little bit about, you've been very modest about yourself. Marie is one of my heroes on Vashon Island. Marie and her husband Mike and Bill Tobin are true Vashon heroes. So tell us a little bit about Bradley versus Asarco.
That was really I'm very proud of my husband for that. He went to a whole bunch of meetings with Bill Tobin. It was a group called IRATE, Island Residents Against Toxic Emissions. Mm-hmm. And we didn't like that smokestack over there polluting us. And we were looking at a class action suit, and everyone else chickened out, and Michael stayed in, and Mike and Bill fought the gallant fight, and they closed the smelter. I think we were maybe the straw that broke the camel's back.
It was, and it established an important precedent in American law about the nature of trespass.
Yes.
Always in the past, you know, incidental trespass of like material from the smokestack landing on your property, it was not litigatable. You couldn't sue on it. You and Mike and Bill changed that. You know, mm-hmm. you changed American law. You changed the nature of what pollution is all about. And so we're all grateful to you.
Yes, thank you. And from an activism standpoint, the idea of local democracy, local mm-hmm. activism, is a really important beacon of hope for us here, how we can thank be you. Small and mighty. Thank you.
The UW Law School used that case for its first 2 weeks of instruction for incoming students for years, and had panel discussions and stuff. It was very fun.
Yeah, I used it at the School of Social Work as well.
Thank you.
I'm really sorry that that Craig was not here today to give us his legal view on that. But I do remember reading. Oh my gosh, you guys were unbelievable.
Well, Mike can be determined. He could be very determined when he wanted to get something done.
Some people call it stubborn.
Yeah. Hard-headed, as it were. I can tell you, let me tell you just one quick Mike story. Mike, for when he was, you know, he was a contractor and doing work here on the island, and he worked on getting building permits. He was, you know, he did that a lot in his job. And once he kind of got out of construction, he began getting building permits for other people. And he told me one day that he walked into the permitting office and walked in with his information and walked out with a permit.
Whoa.
On the same day. Yeah.
Be still my heart.
I just think that is unbelievable and impossible to do in this day and age. But Mike got it done. I mean, that is amazing.
He knew the rules. He knew how to approach them.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
So the Vashon Parks are island treasures, and it is for all of us to thank Marie for being a part of raising the money which is necessary to take care of those things which are not covered by the tax base. And I say that because I'm very much involved and continue to be involved with the Vashon Park District for as long as I shall be upright and in the captain's chair.
So, folks, for Marie Bradley, Bruce, Lynn, Captain Joe, I'm Truman, and we certainly do thank you for tuning in, and we look forward to you tuning in next week for another edition of the Brown Briefly.
Get your ballot in the mail.
Indeed.